All right, let's get into it.
Let's go.
Every great person, whether they're an astronaut, an athlete, or a creative person in general, studies the greats who came before them. The problem is, most photographers and creatives don't know who to study, they don't know where to start. So in this episode, we're going to solve that problem by studying the philosophy of Andy Warhol. So Andy Warhol is probably one of the most famous artists of the 20th century, and he was a master at combining art and business and relationships and using it to his advantage and selling his work for incredible prices, but also creating incredible work as a result of that. So when I originally bought this book, I thought it was going to be a very kind of conventional autobiography where they talk about their life and do it in paragraphs and chapters. But the philosophy of Andy Warhol is very different. So a lot of the conversations are to, there's two characters. It's A and B, and A is Andy, and B is anyone, basically. He says it's anyone that he was in conversation with, anyone he's friends with. So a lot of it is a back and forth conversation, which makes it a very good read. It's not a massive book, but there's a lot of very key wisdom that we can extract and use in our own lives to improve our creative work, our photography, and our lives in general. So let's get straight into it. I at that time decided that business was the best art. Business art is the step that comes after art. I started as a commercial artist, and I wanted to finish as a business artist. After I did the thing called art, or whatever it's called, I went into business art. I wanted to be an art businessman or a business artist. Being good in business is the most fascinating kind of art. During the hippie era, people put down the idea of business. They'd say money is bad and working is bad, but making money is art and working is art and good business is the best art. So that is an excerpt I've read. So that's an excerpt from The Philosophy of Andy Warhol by the man himself, Andy Warhol. And that is the book we'll be studying today and extracting key lessons from to help improve our art, our lives, and our photography. I originally picked up this book thinking it was going to be a normal autobiography. Turns out it's not at all. It's kind of a conversation between A, which is Andy, and B, which is basically anyone he's had a conversation with, any of his close friends. And it's a back and forth dialogue. And then also some chapters and pages are just a monologue, but it makes it a really interesting read. And it's quite a small book, which I think are often the best books to study because they're classics. A lot of the classics are short and they extract the key information that we can apply to our lives and our careers. So that's exactly what we're going to do today. So the first few chapters are about love and growing up, puberty, and beauty. I'm not going to touch too much about those because they don't really apply to what we're learning. There's not much photography lessons to extract from them. But as a summary, he thinks about love very unconventionally. He's definitely asexual. He says he's definitely got some hormone imbalances in his brain. But that definitely probably allowed him to focus on his career a lot because he didn't really like being in romantic relationships. But yeah, very weird first few chapters that I won't touch on too much. But actually, there is a really good, really, really good extract in the first chapter. He says, how dare I call myself a loner? So let me explain how I really mean that and why it's true. At the times of my life when I was feeling the most gregarious and looking for bosom friendships, I couldn't find any takers. So that exactly when I was alone was when I felt the most like not being alone. The moment I decided I'd rather be alone and not have anyone telling me their problems, everybody I'd never seen before in my life started running after me to tell me things I just decided I didn't think was a good idea to hear about. As soon as I became a loner in my own mind, that's when I got what you might call a following. As soon as you stop wanting something, you get it. I found that to be absolutely axiomatic. So that's really interesting. So when Andy was growing up and he was in New York in the 1950s, in his 20s, he couldn't find any takers. He couldn't find any friends. And all he wanted to do was listen to people's problems. But interestingly, as soon as he gave up on that and started being independent and thinking for himself and just doing what he wanted, he started getting a following. I think that's really important because, yeah, as soon as you stop wanting something, you get it. And I think once you stop caring about what other people think about you and you think for yourself and you think from first principle, I think people naturally get drawn to you because they can tell you're just being natural and being yourself and being authentic by thinking independently. That's when you end up getting kind of like a following or more friends or more relationships, which you can help to increase your career and increase opportunities you get. Because if you have more of a following, especially nowadays on social media, you'll definitely have more leverage you can use to unlock new doors that you never would have been able to do without that following. And also, if you stop caring about what other people think and then you get relationships and friendships because of that kind of vibe that you're giving off, it's not arrogant, it's just independent, because you're not being like horrible or anything. You're just kind of thinking for yourself and doing your own thing. And I think people naturally are drawn to that because it's just realistic, it's not fake. And if you get more relationships from that, then relationships run the world, like we said in episode one. So that's going to lead to so many more opportunities and connections that will help elevate your career and just improve your life, hopefully, in general. So yeah, something to take account. I would definitely say I'm in that kind of category of people that tries to think for themselves and wants to think for themselves and doesn't try and follow the herd. And yeah, I think anyone who wants to be an outlier definitely has that mindset. So yeah, very wise words from Andy to kick off the episode. Yeah, so just a quick one about his asexuality. He says, the biggest price you pay for love is that you have to have somebody around. You can't be on your own, which is always so much better. The biggest disadvantage, of course, is no room in bed. Even a Petco cuts into your bedroom. Yeah, so you can tell he's definitely like an introvert at heart, kind of a hermit crab in a way. Throughout the book, he signals that he like isn't doing any work and he's not doing anything. He's just like sitting in bed on the phone or watching TV. He says his wife's his cassette player or his recorder or his TV or something like that. And yeah, he's like a master at counter signaling, because I've done some more research on him and read articles about him from people that knew him. And he was definitely a workaholic, but he loved to signal that he was just some like normal, like just guy who just didn't like attention and didn't like to work and didn't do much work. But obviously all the amazing work he's created over his career and all the opportunities and people he met and success he had, like that had to come from hard work. But it's just interesting that he counter signals it. For the conservationists listening, Andy says, I think having land and not ruining it is the most beautiful art that anybody could ever want to own. So yeah, he's clearly an advocate for just owning land and owning things and just letting it be there and not disrupting it. And yeah, that's definitely kind of what a lot of conservationists want to do or think we should be doing. So it's interesting that he said that. I wouldn't have expected him to say that because he's very kind of New York business, etc., etc. So yeah, there's a lot of contradictions, again, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, like Steve Jobs, a lot of greats that we'll be studying throughout the blogs and podcast episodes. They always seem to be full of contradictions. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger is my favorite example of that. He is kind of politically, economically, he's more right wing, but then a lot of social things when he was governor of California, was more kind of left leaning, and he was an environmentalist but loved Hummers. So it's just like, humans are complex, and I think the greats and the outliers are definitely complex people as well. And I think they openly express that. They don't try and fit into one group of people or fit on one side versus the other. They kind of just show their diverse and contradictory selves and feel free doing so. And I think that's why a lot of people love them, because it's just, they're just showing their real selves. And I think that's incredibly important. If you want to be successful and you want to have an audience that kind of learn from you, you just have to show all sides of yourself. This is really important. So a lot of the things I've underlined and highlighted have just been kind of more art and business wisdom than other wisdom or things he talks about, because it just resonates with me and kind of resonates with you guys, hopefully. So he's talking about kind of productization of your craft. And he says, so you should always have a product that's not just you. An actress should count up her plays and movies, and a model should count up her photographs, and a writer should count up his words, and an artist should count up his pictures. So you always know exactly what you're worth, and you don't get stuck thinking your product is you and your fame and your aura. Yeah, that's incredibly important, because you have to give a valuable service to others to succeed. You can't just, like Andy said, oh yeah, no, I'm my own product. My fame and my persona, my charisma is my product. No, like, you need to have real tangible assets that benefit other people's lives. Like for us, for artists and for photographers, yeah, we should count up our pictures and know what we're worth from that. We should be providing a valuable product to people, and then in exchange we might get money, we might get profit, we might get followers, we might get opportunities. But you have to give something to get something in return. You can't just take without giving, you know. So I think that's incredibly important, because especially as you get more famous as well, I think a lot of people, their ego will probably increase, and then you get stuck thinking your product is you and your fame and your aura. But what gets most people to that level of success is providing something that people resonate with. So that's something to remember for sure. So, this is what the one from the excerpt that is probably my most favorite quote from the book. He says, business art is a step that comes after art. I started as a commercial artist, and I want to finish as a business artist. After I did the thing called art, or whatever that's called, I went into business art. I wanted to be an art businessman or a business artist. During the hippie era, people put down the idea of business. They'd say, money is bad, working is bad. But making money is art, and working is art, and good business is the best art. I think that's probably the realest he's been in terms of expressing his business philosophy in this book, because, like he said, he thinks making money is art, and working is art, and good business is the best art. And that's definitely shown through what he did. He just kind of made this thing called The Factory, which was really famous, his really famous studio in New York. And I think he named it after kind of like Henry Ford's style of like the like mass production of cars. And he kind of mass produced art by doing silk screens of really famous celebrities at the time, often during tragic eras, like Marilyn Monroe after she died, Jackie Kennedy after her husband died. And yeah, he just mass produced these things, and he often did it on commoditized products as well, like Campbell soup cans. I'm sure you guys maybe have seen those things. And these things nowadays are selling for millions, like absolutely millions. And yeah, he definitely was a businessman, and he employed workers to do work for him a lot of the time, which is what branded artists today like Jeff Koons and Damien Hirst do. They outsource the production to people but come up with the ideas. And Warhol was definitely someone who did that. And yeah, he was open about it, especially in the book. But I think business art and art business is incredibly important, because if we want to make it as creators, creatives, artists, photographers, we have to monetize and productize our work. Otherwise, you know, I'm not saying don't create the things that you want to create and don't create things that you're interested in, but you need to be able to turn it into a product and market it to the world, and in exchange, get money for that. Because like he said, money isn't bad. And then what do you do with that money? You reinvest it into yourself, into your business, and you get to make more work and do more of what you love, like taking photos and making art or whatever you love doing. So I think a lot of society, especially in the arts industries, like to signal that they don't want to make money, they don't want to sell out. But I think there's nothing noble in the poor artist. Like David Yarrow says, I think we really do have to productize our work. Otherwise, we won't be able to do it full time. And the goal is to be successful, so successful we can make photos full time. So yeah, I agree with him. Business art and art business is the best art. He elaborates, saying it wasn't easy to do business at the start. He said, we learned a little bit about distribution and soon we started trying to distribute the movies ourselves, but we found it was just too hard. I didn't expect the movies we were doing to be commercial. It was enough that the art had gone into the stream of commerce, out into the real world. It was very heady to be able to look and see our movie out there in the real world on a marquee instead of in the art world. So what he's saying there is you need to market your work. You need to show it to the real world. And in exchange for that, you can profit in return. Like this is, it seems pretty simple, doesn't it? But most people and most artists aren't doing this. Like all you have to do is create something that you want to create, that you love, and then productize it and put it into the real world. And for photography, like we can make our images valuable by creating huge, large-scale fine art prints and only printing a handful of those things. And if the photo is good enough and if you put enough effort in, you know, you can pitch it to galleries or sell it online for huge amounts of money that you can use to make more photos and just continue that cycle. Instead of just leaving your work on your hard drive, on your computer or in your studio, we need to learn how to do sales. And Andy was clearly a master of doing that. And that's why he is so successful and well known. So this is really interesting. It's kind of like foreshadowing what might happen or is starting to happen with AI. Andy Warhol says, unless you have a job where you have to do what somebody else tells you to do, which is what we do not want to do. We want to be our own bosses. We want to be founders of our own businesses and make a profit doing what we love, and that's creating art or creating anything you enjoy. So he says, unless you have a job where you have to do what somebody else tells you to do, then the only person qualified to be your boss would be a computer that was programmed especially for you, that would take into consideration all of your finances, prejudices, quirks, idea potential, temper tantrums, talents, personality conflicts, growth rate desired, amount and nature of competition, what you'll eat for breakfast on the day you have to fulfill a contract, who you're jealous of, etc. A lot of people could help me with parts and segments of the business, but only a computer would be totally useful to me. If I had a good computer, I could catch up with my thoughts over the weekend. If I ever got behind myself, a computer would be a very qualified boss. So that's really interesting. And with artificial intelligence, I'm surprised this isn't already happening with, or at least isn't, people aren't trying to develop this where you basically have kind of like an AI manager, especially if you're like a solopreneur or solo artist or just your own boss, like Andy Warhol saying. I just found that really interesting. It kind of reminds me of the route we're kind of going with AI, because it's getting more and more complex and like smart, if that's the right word. And I think it's very useful for outsourcing a lot of parts of our work, especially parts out online, like posting on social media and coming up with and just automating tasks that are mundane. But what Andy's saying here is, like, if an artificial AI could know everything about him, it would be an advantage to him because it would give him an objective kind of view on what he should do next and how he can advance his career based off all the information in him. And yeah, I can see where he's coming from, and I can see how that could potentially be developed in the near future with the way things are going with AI advancement at the moment. But yeah, it's really interesting he said that in. This would have been in, when did he die? This would have been in the 1970s or the 1980s. So this was way before AI had become a thing and way before personal computers really exploded. So yeah, very, very interesting. He's very, very smart. He's just a very complex character who likes to counter signal and be confusing a lot of the time. But yeah, he also talks about the importance of preparation. He says, when I'm working on a business project, I expect bad things to happen all the time. I always expect to fall through in the biggest and worst way possible. I guess I shouldn't worry, though. If something's going to happen to you, it will. You can't make it happen. And it never does happen until you're past a point where you care whether it happens or not. An actress friend told me that after she didn't want money anymore and after she didn't want jewels anymore, that's when she got the money and the jewels. I guess it's for your own good that it always happens to be that way. Because after you stop wanting things is when having them won't make you go crazy. After you stop wanting them is when you can handle having them. Again, like, kind of paradox or contradiction, like he said before, about as soon as you want something, as soon as you stop wanting something, you get it. Yeah, really interesting what he's saying. Expects the worst when doing business projects, which, you know, it can be a bit pessimistic, but a lot of business is just solving problems. You know, problems are just opportunities and work clothes. And having that mindset that, you know, you're going to go through a very hard process of solving problems and then coming out on the other side, I think is a good mindset to have, especially if you're starting a big project that you really want to take and show to the world and you want it to be successful. You're going to have to go over so many hurdles and climb over so many mountains until you get the success that you desire and you deserve. But what he's also saying is, as soon as you stop wanting success or wanting the money or wanting the girl or wanting the car, as soon as you stop wanting it, that's when you're ready to get it, because when you get it, it won't drive you crazy. And that definitely has value, and it probably is the case, but at the same time, obsession is focus. And I think you have to be obsessed and you have to really want the thing that you think will make you successful, make you happy. And I think if you just persist long enough, you just end up getting it and not going crazy because you've put all the effort in, you've put all the reps in, and you can handle having them, you know? I think if you decided you wanted to be the best in the world at whatever field, photography, or you wanted 1 million followers or something, I think when you first come up with that goal, say you got it the next day, I agree with him. I don't think you'd be able to handle it because it'd be just such a sudden shift. Whereas if you slowly put the steps in and the reps in every day, but relentlessly over a long period of time, it's going to be a gradual change from rags to riches, from failure to success. And I think that gradual trajectory over time allows your brain to slowly adapt to the change, whereas if it was overnight success, which never really happens, yeah, you just wouldn't be able to function. Like he said, Andy said, you'd probably go crazy. So yeah, if you want to be successful in any field, it's going to take years, it's going to take a long time, it'll probably even take decades of gradual change. But I think that's just what's best for humans. You know, we can't be expected to adapt from nothing to everything overnight. So this is really, really good. This is really, really good wisdom from Andy Warhol. He says, sometimes people let the same problem make them miserable for years when they could have just said, So what? That's one of my favourite things to say. So what? My mother didn't love me. So what? My husband won't bull me. So what? I'm a success, but I'm still alone. It took a long time for me to learn it. But once you do, you never forget. Yeah, that's a really good reframe of mind whenever you're going through a hard period or whenever someone tries to make you feel a certain way and try to tell you something's important when it's not, or when it's not actually a big deal. Just saying so what kind of just, it punks the game. It ends the conversation, ends the thought loop, because a lot of humans' problems and anxieties are just made up scenarios in their head. And if we just kind of step back and say, so what? Like, who cares, you know? And just focus on what's essential and important to improving our lives and making us outliers and successful artists and photographers and people, then, you know, everything else deserves to just be put aside. Just focus on the few things that matter to you. And if someone tries to make you think that something's important that doesn't align with your mission or your goal, so what? Just say so what and focus on the essentials. So yeah, really, really good maxim that Andy clearly used throughout his life to its advantage. So Andy Warhol is a really interesting... So Andy has a really interesting take on travel. He says, I don't like to travel because I really like to slow time. And for a plane to have to leave 3 or 4 hours ahead of time, that's a day right there. If you really want your life to pass like a movie in front of you, just travel. You can forget your life. He says straight off that as well. I like a rut. People call me up and say, I hope I'm not disturbing your rut, calling you up like this. They know how much I like it. So the way I took that kind of philosophy and advice from Andy is the importance of slowing things down, giving yourself time to think, giving yourself time to recharge, and kind of not being in the busy trap. I think in the 21st century especially, and probably back then as well, we love to signal how busy we are. Oh, I can't do this. I'm just so busy. And we sound like it's a negative thing, but it's actually kind of signaling like, oh, I'm so busy. Look, all the stuff I have to do. Like, and it kind of gets rewarded. We kind of reward ourselves. But if you're busy the entire time of your life, you're busy traveling, going to conferences and meetings, etc., you're going to look back at your life and realize, like, where did it all go? There's a quote that stuck with me from that movie about Ferris Bueller's Day Off or something. He said, life moves pretty fast, and if you don't stop to look around once in a while, you'll miss it. And I think that's so true. I think in today's culture, we love to post all the pictures of us traveling and travel the world. And yeah, we should definitely go traveling, see new places, meet new people, but it can be done just in your room, you know? A lot of ideas can be generated just on a slow walk on a Sunday. And falling into the busy trap won't allow you to do that. A lot of problems in the world could be solved if we could just feel comfortable sat in a room alone with our thoughts or on our desk and just getting on with creative projects. And especially if you're a photographer who wants to travel the world, and that's something I definitely want to do. If we did that for our entire careers, we'd waste a lot of time traveling, and especially if we were just like sat on our phone scrolling and stuff. So I think there is a lot of value to just being at home in the routine you're in and giving yourself time to think and giving yourself time to just come up with ideas, which you can then go out into the world and create and spread and show. But yeah, there's a lot of value in just not traveling and just sitting in your room and coming up with great work. And then with a rut, yeah, I don't know what Andy's definition of a rut really is, but I certainly don't really like ruts. But when I look back at ruts I've been in where I have stopped creating photos, stopped putting my work out to the world, I've always returned with a bit more clarity and a bit more kind of thought of what I really want to do. I didn't post on social media for about 10 months recently. And I spent that time, it could have been seen as a rut, but I spent my time trying a few different things and reading, working out and like practicing photography. And now I've come back and I feel so much more aligned with what I want to do. If I didn't do that, if I didn't go on that 10-month gap, that rut, I definitely wouldn't have started this podcast. And I knew in the back of my mind instinctively that starting a podcast was the right thing to do. But I just had to step back for a bit and just kind of think things through and figure out what I really wanted to do with my life. So yeah, there is definitely value in stepping back and being in a rut, like Andy Warhol says. Oh yeah. So in later on in the book, chapter 10, atmosphere, he talks about the importance of space, and this definitely applies to our photography. He says, I really believe in empty spaces, although as an artist, I make a lot of junk. Empty space is never wasted space. Wasted space is any space that has art in it, which is hilarious seeing that he is an artist who clearly has taken a lot of space in the world's best galleries, museums, and in rich people's homes. But I think photographers, empty space is never wasted space is such an important maxim to internalize. And it's something I've definitely internalized in my work. The power of empty space is so underrated. I think being a minimalist in photography can have so much benefit because it lets your subject that you're focusing on have space to breathe, and it lets you create some really nice minimalist compositions. Recently, I won in the British Wildlife Photography Awards from with my image of a snowdrop at night. And it's literally just a picture of a snowdrop. I'll put it on the screen, but it's a picture of a snowdrop. And then in the like bottom right-hand corner, and then the rest of the frame is just black. Just no clutter whatsoever. And that is an example of me utilizing empty space in my photography. If a photo is cluttered and there's not a lot of empty space, especially in subject-focused photography, I think having a lot of clutter creates tension, and tension points distracts the viewer from the main subject that you were photographing. It could be a tree, it could be garbage, it could be a bit of dust in the sky or a cloud. Like in Adam's moonrise photo, one of his most famous photos, he originally had clouds in the sky at the top of the frame, but in later prints, he removed those clouds and that created empty space. And now it's seen as one of his most famous photos. So empty space is never wasted space. Utilize empty space in your images if you want to succeed. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with Andy on that one. Andy Warhol doesn't identify himself as an artist. He identifies himself as a business artist. He says about artists, an artist is somebody who produces things that people don't need to have, but that he, for some reason, thinks it would be a good idea to give them. Business art is a much better thing to be making than art. Art doesn't support the space it takes up, whereas business art does. If business art doesn't support its own space, it goes out of business. So that, by that definition, every art in a museum or in a gallery is business art. And what Andy's referring to is just normal art that just sits in your studio, or photos that sit on your hard drive. So what he's saying is, he's not saying that you can't make art business art. He's saying that to make your art business art is to turn it into a product and market it and make a profit from it so you can make more art, like he said earlier. So yeah, that's a very interesting kind of philosophy on things. And I think it's something that I agree with. You can see all these artists like Mark Rothko or Damien Hirst or Francis Bacon, like they made art for themselves, but it's technically, according to what Andy's saying, business art, because it's selling for millions of dollars and being displayed in the most famous galleries and in the most famous museums, which bring in traffic from around the world. And that traffic pays the museum or the gallery often to see that work or to buy that work. So yeah, I think if you want to be an outlier and a successful artist and photographer, you need to make your art business art. And that's just turning it into something that's valuable and something that people would want to buy, want to have displayed on their wall or in their gallery or anything.
Ooh.
So this is a good bit of advice that Andy Warhol's mum actually gave him. And he said, it's about kind of persistence and building relationships. He says, I've always had a conflict because I'm shy, and yet I like to take up a lot of personal space. Mum always said, don't be pushy, but let everybody know you're around. I wanted to command more space than I was commanding, but then I knew I was too shy to know what to do with the attention if I did manage to get it. That's why I love television. That's why I feel that television is the media I'd most like to shine in. I'm really jealous of everybody who's got their own show on television. So, and then he says, I want a show of my own called Nothing Special. So don't be pushy, but let everybody know you're around. I think it's a really good maxim, and it kind of reminds me of you don't ask, you don't get. We don't want to be in people's faces, and we don't want to annoy people, and we don't want to just ask for stuff without giving anything in return. But if we want something, we believe we can get it, then I think there's no wrong in persisting for it. Edward Bok, a person everyone should study and someone we will be studying on this podcast soon. He was a guy who started from nothing as a US immigrant from Holland, the Netherlands, and he dropped out of school after 6 years, started reading biographies and sending autographs to the most famous people in the world at the time, like Mrs. Lincoln, James Garfield, Ralph Waldo Emerson, the titans of that era in America. And he asked for autographs, but got advice from them as well after reading about them and doing research. And then he ended up creating one of the most famous like journals and magazines in the world. I think it was the Ladies or Women's Home Journal, read by over 1 million people at the time, which is obviously huge back then, before in the 1800s and 1900s, when digital media didn't exist and it was harder to distribute things. But a lot of people said about Edward Bok, what could be said about him, and what they loved about him was his pertinacity, his persistence. If he wanted something, he would just keep going, politely, obviously. He wouldn't be rude or arrogant, but if he wanted to get something, he would try all he could to get it. So Andy Warhol's mum saying, don't be pushy, but let everybody know you're around, I think is really good advice. You don't want to be too in people's faces, but you know, let them know you're there. Let them know you have work. Let them know who you are. Obviously, listen to them as well. But yeah, don't just sit in the corner and be shy and twiddle your thumbs and expect people to come up to you, because that's probably not going to happen. You should go up to them. You should make the contacts. You should show your work to other people. And yeah, know your name's there. Build your brand by doing that. Let everybody know you're around, but don't be too pushy. So a bit of advice from Andy Warhol about going through hard times and dealing with that. He says, never complain about a situation while the situation is still going on. And number two, if you can't believe it's happening, pretend it's a movie. So a lot of the successful people I've studied so far, and I'm sharing to you guys for you guys to learn, they often reframe things positively. So whenever they're going through a hard time, they always try and reframe it and try and find a positive in it. And I think never complaining about a situation while the situation is still going on is a good technique to use. Charlie Munger, former vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, which is one of the biggest and best investing firms or companies in the world. Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, again, people we're going to be studying. They're so wise beyond their years. And they love studying biographies and reading like we're doing right now. He says, self-pity has no utility. And before you guys get angry or say, oh, like, that's wrong, this is the guy whose kid, he watched his child slowly die of leukemia whilst he was going through a divorce, before there was any cures or anything for leukemia, because this was quite a while ago. It must have been the 1950s or 60s. And if he's saying self-pity has no utility, I think it's a good thing to follow by, especially after going through something like that. So Andy Warhol definitely agrees with that from what he said. Never complain about situation while the situation's still going on. I think that's good, because if you don't complain about the situation and you try and reframe it, or you just try to endure it, I think that increases your chances of getting out of it quicker, because you have your focus is more on solving the problems rather than just kind of feeling sorry for yourself about the problems and losing hope. So yeah, that's a good technique to use, because we're all going to go through hard times. It's just part of human nature, and human existence is suffering. And yeah, if you can't believe it's happening, pretend like it's a movie. That's probably quite good as well. It disassociates yourself from what you're going through, makes you zoom out a bit, another way of reframing. But yeah, a lot of the great people that I'm studying for the show seem to be able to have this ability to just zoom out a bit and positively change a bad situation, make it good, and just persist through it. And I think if we learn to do that instead of giving up or quitting or losing hope throughout our careers, I think that'd be a very, very good technique to have in our arsenal. So yeah, this is really interesting. He says something about being shot. So there was this, I think, very mentally unwell, very extreme feminist who knew Andy. She, I think, was paranoid and thought that he stole one of her movie scripts or something. So she goes into the factory, his famous studio, while he's working, ends up shooting him and damaging so many of his internal organs. It was his stomach, his lungs, his liver, his gallbladder, his spleen. Obviously rushed to the hospital, has to have surgery, is pronounced medically dead for I don't know how long. And they're able to revive him. It's one of the best feats of surgery anyone's ever done, I'm pretty sure. It was really low stakes, like they're going to die. It was a miracle. And he says, when he was awake, like in hindsight, he said something about the healthcare system in the US. He was like, when I was in hospital, when I was dying in hospital, they gave me a check. They made me write a check. And I just found that really, in a dark way, like funny. It just made me laugh. It's just like, whoa, that's crazy. But that definitely affected his career and life. I think he became more of a recluse after that, obviously, understandably, because before, the factory was a really open space where anyone could just walk in and collaborate and stuff. It was a really cool space. I think after that incident, after he got shot, he definitely became more of a recluse. And yeah, he was scared of hospitals, and obviously understandably probably after such a traumatic event like that. And I think he put off having a gallbladder surgery. Eventually he had it, because he was just like in really bad state health wise, and ended up I think like dying like after the surgery. It's really sad. And yeah, so watch your health, obviously. And you know, it ended what was a really, really productive and impactful and amazing career he had as a business artist. But yeah, after his death, his work has just sold for so much. It's just increased in value over the decades, and it's still being sold in most Sotheby's and Christie's auctions for a lot of money. He's broken records. Was it one of his Marilyn Monroe prints, shot Marilyn. There's a funny story behind that. So when he was doing one of his Marilyn Monroe's silkscreen prints, one of his friends, she like came into the studio and asked if she could shoot it. And what Andy Warhol thought was, oh, she's going to take a photo of it. Turns out she like whips out a revolver and just shoots through it, through like a stack of his silkscreens prints. And he ends up calling it like Shot Marilyn, particular one, sold for tens of millions of pounds. And it's just crazy to think how his work is pop art. But stuff like his Campbell soup, like just literally a picture or silkscreen print of a soup can, is selling for tens of millions of pounds and dollars. But I think the cool thing about Andy was that I hadn't seen anyone else who, he was kind of the first one to do stuff, to make art on commoditized products, and his silkscreen prints in different colors are just absolutely iconic. And he really knew how to turn it into a business, how to market it, how to sell it. And his work clearly is standing the testament of time because it's still selling for so much money. And he's produced a lot of work as well. And the fact that a lot of his work, he has made so much work, and there isn't a huge scarcity value. It's not like he's like Van Gogh and only has X amount, like a small amount of paintings and work that survived. Andy, I think, has a lot of work that survived, but because he's such an icon, because he was such an almost like a workaholic, but so dedicated to perfecting his craft and doing things differently and the way he wanted to do it, it ended up paying dividends. But yeah, it was just such a sad way for him to go, really, because I feel like if he probably had that surgery sooner, maybe he would have lasted a bit longer and produced more work. But yeah, that is where I'll leave it. Highly, highly recommend The Philosophy of Andy Warhol. There's so much nuggets of wisdom, and the way he thinks is really, really interesting. And he has a lot of good maxims that we can use to improve our photography, art, and life. And yeah, I'm definitely going to study more of Andy Warhol. I think his business philosophy and turning his art into a business is something we can all learn from to help us do what we love, which is create art and make content and just do what we enjoy. He clearly made a profit and found a way to make a living from doing that. So it's definitely something, someone we'll study much more. There's definitely a lot more biographies of Warhol to read as well, so there'll definitely be a future episode on him. But for now, if you use the link in the description to buy the book, you'll be supporting the show and me at no extra cost for you, and you'll get a great book that can help you improve your photography, improve your art, and hopefully improve your life. So until next time, go grab the book, and I'll see you soon.